This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Eek. And my guest joining us for her regular show is Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. And we also have joining us today, consultant clinical psychologist, Dr. Danya Pillay. Today, we are discussing children and their mental health during as well as after lockdown. And we know that children and teenagers have not been mere bystanders in this pandemic. They've actually been at the center of it. They've witnessed illness, deaths, school closures, job losses, financial uncertainties in their family, as well as grief. And how has all of this affected their mental health? And are parents able to recognize and support children who are facing challenges to their mental well-being? We know it was World Children's Day just this weekend on the 20th of November. So we'd like to discuss some of these issues with the guests today. How are both of you today, Dr. Rajini and Dr. Danya?
Fine, thank you.
I'm doing well, thank you.
So just some statistics, I suppose, to set the context. This year, UNICEF's State of the World's Children Report looked at children, teens and caregivers' mental health, and they estimated that worldwide, more than 13% of adolescents aged 10 to 19 live with a diagnosed mental disorder. But they also noted that children and young people also report psychosocial distress that does not necessarily rise to the level of epidemiological disorder, but it does disrupt their lives, health and prospects for the future. So just to set that in context as a background for our discussion, and I actually wanted to get, maybe Dr. Rajini, you could weigh in first. When we talk about mental health in children, what exactly is mental health in the course of childhood? How do we look at their mental health and well-being?
Mental health is actually that social, emotional, psychological well-being of a child or anyone really. And you know, it's very important because we need good mental health to be able to make decisions, think clearly, form social connections, and even learn new skills, shall we? Because if your mental health is not good, it's going to be harder for you to navigate your way through even your day-to-day life and functioning.
And Dr. Danya, how do you weigh in on what mental health looks like for children?
Yeah, I do agree with Dr. Rajini. So on the whole, it's like reaching developmental and emotional milestones, learning healthy social skills, learning how to cope when there are problems. You know, so children who are mentally healthy, they have a positive quality of life and they can function well at home, at school, and in their larger communities.
Do we do enough, Dr. Danya, to position mental health in the center of children's upbringing in terms of the way we structure their childhood, for instance, education, their play and things like that?
Not often. I feel that, we often put physical health at the center stage, you know, and mental health is often in the background, and it's always in the background. And now there's a lot more awareness about the importance of mental health and how much it affects a child in the whole, right? So often parents and families put physical health, academics. Academics is always on top of the list. But again, I always speak to families and we talk about how important mental and emotional health is, and that is not on track, how everything else is disrupted.
And if we could quickly look at what do you see in a child's life and environment which affects their mental health, what would you say are potentially sources of stress, either mentally or emotional, to them?
It could be anything. It could be day-to-day stuff even, you know, like friendship issues, a friend not speaking to you today, not getting your homework done on time, mom yelling at you in the morning, or, you know, for being slow at getting ready for school. It could be just little things like this. It doesn't have to be a ginormous issue that, I mean, in our eyes, these are just minute things, but this can have an impact on a child.
Dr. Rajini, you know, you look at a child's development, right? And you're tracking their milestones. You're looking at where issues could occur. Dr. Dania has talked about the everyday. She's listed out 3 out of 5 things that all of us have already done this morning. That's making me feel a bit guilty. But so I guess in the bigger picture of things, when you look at a child going through development, what would you say affects their mental health?
It starts with from when they're very young, how they build relationships and connect with other people. You know, it starts with, I mean, it's very difficult to summarize it in just one succinct point, but if we're looking at, you know, mental health equivalent to building resilience in children, it starts with whether they have that, the connections with other people, so that they can learn from them, they can pick up communication skills, problem-solving skills, and you know, it also starts with how we as parents or carers approach children. Yeah, when they have difficulties, you know, do we run in, jump in, do it for them, mm-hmm. or do we give them the space to try it out first, and maybe just assisting them along the way or giving them suggestions along the way. And all this sort of shapes mental health. So if you have a child who all his life in the first few years, everything's been done for him. And then suddenly you throw him into the big wide world of school, primary school, and he has to fend for himself. And there's no one there to help him fend for himself, from, you know, teacher telling him off, or he can't find his eraser in his pencil box. Little things like that, you know. All this can have an impact on mental health in the longer term.
And how do you see that, particularly for children who are non-typically developing, in terms of how their environment and growing up in a world that may not necessarily cater to them, how does that affect their mental health?
Yeah, in the very same way that I said earlier, but what we have to remember is for many children who are not typically developing, or at least the majority of the children that I see, often have communication difficulties. And when we're talking about communication difficulties, it's maybe a difficulty that we perceive. They are expressing themselves, but how they do it is through their behaviors. And that's often interpreted as maybe abnormal behavior or behavior that's not acceptable, and we try and suppress it. And then we actually are creating more issues with how they then go on to express themselves and learn. And often we try and get them to conform with how we want them to learn and how we want them to pick up skills. And that affects their emotional regulation. But, you know, shall we, I always say this, it's not very different if you look at typical children, yeah? How we want them to learn and how we want them to live their lives often puts stress on them. And that comes out in their emotional regulation and how they are able to regulate their own emotions before they can tackle the rest of the world.
But, you know, and it's the way that adults run the world, and we think that kids, you know, you don't know any better. You'll just have to take our word for it. We've eaten more salt than you've eaten rice. you know, I'd love to hear from either you or Dr. Dania. Sort of how can we start changing that mindset that kids actually, you know, can make decisions on their own, can drive things on their own, can be guided to do that without it, I suppose, being imposed too much on them. Perhaps Dr. Dania.
Yeah, I mean, we often feel like kids have to fit into our world, you know, the way things are, you know, they have to fit in to us. And sometimes it just feels like you said, if we were to adjust a little and see things from their goggles, it can work too, you know. And again, it's a bit of a mind shift as well. And when we talk about, like you said, are kids able to cope with the problems that are thrown at them? I guess from a parent's perspective, the first thing you want to do is jump in and kind of fix the problem. But like Dr. Rajini said, it is a lot of times we have to hold back and let them try. And sometimes they need to experience some discomfort and disappointments and you know, just learning through that, learning problem-solving skills from that. And these are all little steps to build resilience. And when we talk about resilience as well, it's not something kids either have or don't have. It's a skill that kids develop as they grow, you know, and it's things that we can help them to develop.
Dr. Rajini?
Yeah, so I look at it, you know, if you look at it from a developmental perspective, when babies are born, yes, they're born with their brain, but it's not fully developed. And we know that, you know, look at how a newborn baby is to what they're like when they're 5 years old. And in those first 5 years of life, there's a lot of change. And you see that, you know, they pick up skills from just lying there, crying, to being able to walk, get things that they want, etc. But what people forget is the adult brain is not fully formed until they're 25. So, you know, as much as we say the first 5 years of life is when maximum brain development happens, the subtle connections are not being formed fully until they're 25. So to expect children or even young adults to think and behave as adults do above the age of 25 is wrong, because we have proof. We have proof that brain is still developing.
Absolutely. We'll go for a quick break and we'll come back and look at how lockdown has exacerbated some of the stresses that children face, and go on to sort of explore a little bit about how do we recognize when children are going through mental and emotional issues. I'm speaking to two guests today, Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician for her monthly show, and consultant clinical psychologist, Dr. Danya Pillay, discussing children and their mental health in lockdown. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guests today, consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Saravanandan and consultant clinical psychologist Dr. Danya Pillay, in this pairing to talk about children and their mental health issues in as well as after lockdown, as we see things easing and children going back to school and some semblance of normal activities. But we should not dismiss that they have been through almost 2 years of being isolated, kept away from friends, lacking a lot of social interactions. And we're looking at what is the impact on their mental health. So we've already looked at on a more general basis, regardless of the pandemic, it can affect their emotional well-being when they face stresses in life and if those stresses are not addressed. But of course, everyone's looking at, you know, how children are going to come out of this pandemic. And Dr. Danya, you know, just using what we've discussed as the backdrop, how would you say the lockdown and the pandemic has exacerbated either the daily stressors or their children's ability to be resilient?
From my experience, you know, it seems like the lockdown has tremendously affected kids and their mental health and in their emotional well-being. I mean, there's a lot, like you said before, while we adults feel we're in the thick of it all, kids are too, you know, a whole lot of things have happened for them, and, you know, changes in their routine, right? Having to physically distance from family, friends. And then in terms of their learning, you know, there's been a huge change in their learning, right? So getting used to virtual learning environments, and then now with going back to school, okay, no. Now you go back to seeing your friends, but even when you see your friends, you can't be close to them. You know, you don't get to have recess with them. You don't get to do the normal things in school anymore, right? And then even continuity of healthcare, you know, there are kids who need special services like, you know, occupational therapy or speech therapy. And even that, there has been a break. And there are lots of kids who don't benefit very much from doing online therapy sessions like this. You know, the little ones who need face-to-face, right? On top of all of that, missing significant life events, you know, kids who have missed graduations, concerts, holidays, just celebrations in general. These are all little things that, like you said, have been with us for almost 2 years, and it creates a huge impact.
How important are those things? We tend to think of it as, well, there's always next year, you know?
Yeah, but again, when it's prolonged, you know, when we thought, okay, this online learning was just 2 months, you know, oh, maybe a month, maybe 2 months, maybe 3 months. But then when it drags on to 18 months, almost 2 years, it creates a huge impact. And now I see kids, there's some kids who are not very keen on going back to school. You know, they're like, oh, but this was a lot easier. There's less flexibility when you go back to school. You know, there's time management, there's social skills that you might maybe have kind of lost or forgotten, you know, like what to do, how do I do this? And so even teachers at school, they're preparing to welcome back a whole bunch of students who need to get used to physical learning again.
Absolutely, yeah. And Dr. Rajini, you know, you talked about how getting children to be resilient is knowing when to let go and let them discover. In lockdown, they've been at home. Chances are either, you know, they've not had to really figure out things much on their own. Parents have been around all the time. How have you seen this playing out?
You know, there have been positives and negatives. So I don't like to only look at it from a negative perspective. There have been parents who've been pretty creative, getting kids more involved with day-to-day family life. Simple things like chores, preparing meals, making life fun. But I have to say, Shawik, that, you know, this was particularly true last year when we first went through lockdown. But over the course of the more recent lockdown, even some of those families have struggled. And you know, I think without relying if it hasn't impacted us in some way. So can you imagine if it's impacted us? That then has an effect on children, because when we are stressed, it then impacts our children because of the way we talk to them or react, etc. What I'm seeing a lot more of are children across the board, all ages, all levels of abilities, exhibiting symptoms of stress. So acting out with their behaviors, having difficulties with coping with just day-to-day life, losing interest in things that they may have been interested in, a lot of sleep disturbance. A lot of kids have really struggled with that. And as we know, sleep is very important for children in terms of their mental and physical well-being. There have been children who've developed very poor eating habits, as a result of the loss of the usual routines, and parents sort of, having had to struggle through work a lot more this last few months. In just a huge number of ways. We often think about children being affected by it as being stressed. They withdraw, but there are also children who act out more, become more aggressive sometimes, whether verbally, physically, and that can be a sign of depression as well, or depressive symptoms or anxiety, because they, you know, it's not like adults. You can say, I feel sad, I feel angry today. Children don't often use those words, or they don't know those words, especially when talking about children who have different abilities. When I say they don't know how to say it. Yeah.
Dr. Danya?
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Rajini. Again, they might not have the ability to express themselves, but this is where parents and teachers can keep a lookout for, you know, some warning signs. And again, they might just be day-to-day stuff. You know, like Dr. Rajini mentioned earlier, changes in eating, changes in sleeping, some regressive behavior, you know, like going back to some bedwetting incidents, toileting incidents, you know, these kind of things, and then irritability. And again, avoiding, this is very common, just avoiding doing things that was required of them, you know, like even going for online class, physically being there, but actually having two other tabs open, chatting with friends, playing games, you know, not at all focused, and then loss of interest in things that they used to do, like doing, you know. And again, I've had parents saying, you know, they've had kids who have unexplained, you know, body aches, tummy aches, headache, right? So psychosomatic symptoms like this as well.
And what about for teenagers, Dr. Danya? I think some of these behaviors could be brushed off as teens going through puberty or hormonal phases. How do we distinguish them?
Yeah, well, I suppose one of the first things to think about is, to emphasize is not to take any of this lightly, you know, especially at this time. If there's anything that is slightly different from your teenager's behavior and, being withdrawn, like we talked about earlier, it could be being withdrawn or, on the other hand, acting out, right? And I feel the most important thing is to have an open line of communication. And again, that is something somewhat difficult to suddenly start when the kid is a teenager, you know? So like Dr. Rajini said, it all starts early, you know? So this is something that we need to instill at a young age, this kind of talking about things. And it could be something as simple as, it doesn't have to be a full-on heart-to-heart talk, but it's like, how was your day? You know, tell me something that made you smile today, or what was difficult for you today, or how has this week, you know, it can be just open-ended questions in general, but just getting them to express their emotions as well.
Yeah, because I know for a fact, right, the moment you ask how was school today, you're going to get a one-word answer. Okay, you know.
Again, that doesn't mean our parents stop questioning, because they know that's all the child's going to say. So we keep at it, keep asking, you know. And again, we share our bit as well. Yeah, my day at work was like this, you know. Show them that, hey, we have our ups and downs as well. You know, it's not just you with difficulties. You know, we all go through this, and show to them that, hey, this is how I cope with my issues. You know, if I have difficulties, I talk about it. This is what I do. So we are modeling skills that we want them to learn as well.
Dr. Rajini, you want to weigh in on that?
I think it's very important that we don't push aside whatever kids say, yeah? Don't disagree with them or immediately jump in to say to them, well, I think it's like that because you were like that. You know, it's quite common when the kids come in and they say, oh, teacher had a bad day, or the teacher scolded me. And the first thing we say is, what did you do? You know, in that sort of the emphasis of the words, really, instead of saying, oh, what happened, you know, which is more less threatening. And this is where I guess we as parents have to relearn that communication, right? Especially when we're dealing with children who have these mental health issues, who are already showing signs of it, because you don't want to put more stress on them. Yeah. And sometimes it's good to just be, you know, be there with them. Maybe not even talking, but listening to something that's fun, watching something together. You don't always, even if you see that your child is not him or herself, sometimes they don't want you to ask these things, you know, especially with teenagers. They will just say, don't. Okay. I get that sometimes. Just don't say anything. And you say, okay, but just be there with them. Don't walk away, because just the act of being there sometimes, or just giving them a hug, you know, is just letting them know that you're there. We can help you with whatever it is that you're going through.
Dr. Danya, do kids inherently have the skills and the abilities to recognize and sort of to recognize their own distress? Or is it something that we actually need to nurture in them?
I feel that it's something that we need to nurture in them. You know, there's some kids who are just more in tune with their feelings. You know, there are kids who just know and they're able to express themselves a little more easily than others, right? And again, this is something that is not just like that. It's a skill that can be taught, can be developed, right? So when we talk about how do I get my child to recognize these things, and how do I get them to express themselves? So one would be to model positive sharing of emotions, right? So like I mentioned earlier, we talk about it ourselves, right? Get them to know that these are things that it's normal. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be angry sometimes. But it's how we respond to these emotions. It's how we cope with that which is important, right? So we demonstrate coping skills. We label our emotions, you know, let them know this is what it is. This is how we manage.
I'm just going to add to that. As Dr. Dania said, definitely, it's about nurturing these skills. You know, a lot of evidence shows that when babies are young, or as they, you know, in the first few years of life, if we don't respond to them, they actually start to withdraw. Okay. And, you know, it's not to say that if you've, you know, you have a child who maybe wasn't nurtured properly, that you can't sort of nurture it later on, but it's obviously harder. But the same goes with teenagers. We sometimes forget that with teenagers, they still need that nurturing. And if we keep ignoring those distress signs, or we don't approach them in the right way, we also teach them to suppress those feelings. And that's the biggest danger, really, when we don't let them face it and tackle it and, you know, help them through it. When we just say, oh, it's just lockdown, you're just feeling like that because of lockdown, everyone's feeling the same way, you're actually suppressing it for them rather than saying, yes, it's hard. It's hard for everyone and we, you know, we're going to do this together, you know, and if you need more help, let me know, you know, giving them those signals. You may not say them those actual words. So I think, you know, nurture is definitely something, nurturing those skills is something definitely that's an ongoing process throughout their childhood, adolescence into adulthood.
And Dr. Dania, what are your worries about what could happen if, you know, so many kids are going through this? They are distressed, they're stressed. Perhaps a lot of it's not being picked up, addressed. What are your worries as we go on? Perhaps, you know, as people look at living with the pandemic, we assume that everything's just going to go back to normal. But what about the kids?
Yeah, well, especially if these difficulties and challenges are not addressed, right? We are running a risk of it becoming, developing to become bigger issues, you know, like how you mentioned earlier, where the number, the statistic about the number of children and adolescents living with a mental illness, right? At the same time, there are many, many children and adolescents who might not fulfill the criteria for a mental illness, but are struggling with a variety of challenges, right? But if we don't address it, it will very well come up to that level, you know. So, and again, research has also shown that there are many adults who seek mental health treatment, reflect on the impact of their childhood and difficulties they had when they were younger that were not addressed. And, you know, and that's why they are where they are. So at this stage, so this awareness of mental health and the importance of mental health at this stage and on top of it during a pandemic is extremely important. And families, schools play a big role in nurturing mental health.
What should we do, Dr. Dania, right now? What should parents and perhaps teachers, as some of the most immediate caregivers as well, what should we all be doing?
One thing that I know that teachers can do, right, with the kids going back to school right now, is to acknowledge this shared experience that we all had. You know, it's not just all back to business, let's go study, you know, and that's all it is. You know, I've talked to teachers recently about how, you know, perhaps like once a week or something, just having some sort of like a little support group. You know, this really works with the teenagers as well. You know, like, what was your experience? What happened? Did you lose a loved one? What were the losses that you had in this time? Because again, it helps to know that there's some sort of shared connection. Hey, it's not me alone who experienced this. My friends went through the same thing. You know, to, again, talk about what happened, talk about your emotions. And it helps, you know, having this shared experience, getting to talk about it, moving along together, right? And with families as well, with parents as well. So little things that can help is, you know, where you can, like Dr. Rajini mentioned as well, spending time together, you know, even just looking at the bright side, you know, again, we are hopefully on the road to recovery. Again, not back to normal, but hopefully on the right track, right? So again, one of the most important things is having hope. You know, without hope, that kids find it really difficult because there's so much of uncertainty, right? Is this going to end? When are things going to get back to normal? When can I go swimming without not having this friend there? When can I just go for dance class face-to-face, right? You know, so all this uncertainty is very stressful. It's challenging for us. So imagine what it's like for kids, right? So focusing on the positives and focusing on how strong they've been, you know, how strong they've been and how resilient they've been all this while.
Dr. Rajini, what do you think? What can we do?
Firstly, I think, you know, as Dr. Danya says, hope is very important. But also explaining to children, look, we don't know what's going to happen next, but maybe we can learn from what's happened before and start preparing. So I think schools need to have contingency plans so that children are aware. You know, it can't just be if this happens again. I mean, we're looking at Europe and, you know, they went through a fantastic phase and now they have seen cases rise again. Showing examples like, okay, we need to keep our masks on, kids, because if not, we're going to start to see things surge again. Or yes, things are surging, but we can protect ourselves. So giving them those sort of skills, that telling them that, okay, we have a problem. We don't know where that problem is going, when that problem is going to end, but we can be prepared, okay? And these are things that we can do. And all of us don't know where this is heading, but we're here, letting them know, as Dr. Danya says, that we are here and we can do this together. I think my worry is that we're going to have a bigger pandemic after the coronavirus pandemic is over. And that bigger pandemic is going to be a longer pandemic of mental health issues. Before the pandemic happened in 2019, a lot of our newspapers had headlines looking with the title "Mental Health Pandemic Hits Malaysia," etc. Our youth are going through a lot. I think we're going to see more, and I hope that the politicians, the civil servants, the people making policies, instead of doing things like revamping curriculums, deciding what needs to be taught and not, start looking at how we're going to prevent things from getting worse. Yeah. How we're going to try and support children so we don't end up with a society where we're struggling in the future, because this generation is going to produce the next generation. And we know that, you know, if you look at it scientifically, stress, anxiety, you know, poor physical health, etc., does affect your genetics, and that has an impact on the children that they then have. So I think, as Danya says, I hope in schools, teachers don't just focus on, oh, we've got to catch up on a whole load of curriculums. I mean, look at the mess they've made with the SPM timetable. I don't know if anybody is aware. I mean, that's clearly someone not thinking about children's mental health. Sorry to bring it up here, Shawik, but
it's been a concern for a lot of parents and young people.
I mean, that's clearly somebody who really has not seen the bigger picture. I'm really shocked. I mean, these poor kids, they've struggled enough. Shouldn't we be giving them some leeway? But I hope, teachers, that we look at beyond learning from just completing a syllabus, that we look at learning as encompassing that emotional health, that, you know, because if we don't look at mental health, kids are not going to learn. And no matter what you do, no matter how many maths questions you make them do, they're not going to get it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that absolutely is the link that parents need and educators need to realize. Dr. Danya, just one very last one quickly. For parents and families who do recognize that, you know, perhaps they may need to reach out to get some professional help for their children, what's their first port of call?
Typically, a lot of families go to their pediatrician. That's normally that person is normally their first port of call. And, you know, to discuss what issues they have. And then I see a lot of pediatricians referring these children to counselors or psychologists, and that always helps, you know, because parents already have a connection with their pediatrician and they feel comfortable chatting with them, and even the child might feel open enough to speak to them. And otherwise, it would be through counselors at school, right? So the kids themselves, the students themselves may speak to their teacher or their counselor. And if they need extra support, they would refer out as well.
Thank you so much to the both of you, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Dr. Danya Pillay, consultant clinical psychologist. We've been discussing children and their mental health throughout this pandemic. And Dr. Rajini did make a very, very strong link between children's mental health and their learning, their ability to learn. Now, do join us for our Health and Living webinar this Friday on the 26th of November at 12 noon. And we will be discussing more about children and learning, whether it's the different ways that children learn, as well as children who may have learning difficulties. How can we support them in the education system, especially when they are struggling? So Dr. Rajini will be joining us for that webinar, along with Alternative Pathway Curriculum Coordinator Madeline Proud. So that's happening on the 26th of November at 12 noon. It will be streamed on our Facebook Live, so you can head to BFM's Facebook page right now to check out the details as well as to register your interest. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.